Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to Nate and Danny's Trade Deadline Day Extravaganza. They've recorded so much about these big trades. They did an episode focusing on the Kevin Durant to the Suns trade. They did an episode on the Lakers Timberwolves Jazz trade. They've done this episode about every single deal that happened on deadline day. Nate and John Hollinger are recording an episode for tomorrow, looking back at trade deadline day, going even further into the bigger picture analysis of all these moves. To get all that content, though, you've got to subscribe to Dunked On Prime. This is only a sneak preview. Yes, this is a packed episode with a lot of great analysis, but it is only the start of what Nate, Danny, and John are doing on trade deadline day. But good news, you can still subscribe with our mock trade deadline sale. We've got that still available at dunkedon.supportingcast.fm. You can subscribe with that trade deadline sale and not only get this great trade deadline coverage, but get all our great coverage through what looks like, especially after this deadline, is going to be a thrilling finish to the regular season and into the playoffs. Nate and Danny's game coverage is second to none. That's a great feature through the playoffs. So it's a great time to subscribe. Get the trade deadline coverage. Stick around for this stretch run. Dunkedon.supportingcast.fm. Dunkedon.supportingcast.fm. Use the mock trade deadline sale while it's still available. It won't be much longer.
Deadline day is in the books. A crazy day. Ultimately, in trade season, all but two teams made a move. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Chicago Bulls. Both teams that probably could have used an upgrade at some degree, but didn't get that done. Plenty of other moves has happened. The buyout market is going to be fascinating now as well. And the question I wanted to ask you, Danny, we didn't see any first rounders get moved today, unless you want to count a pick swap that's probably going to be worth, you know, 5 to 8 picks in the first round in the Eric Gordon deal. Which of these deals do you think is, and I guess, you know, some teams like the Clippers made multiple deals, so you can kind of fold those in, but what is the most significant transaction or series of transactions to you from today?
It's harder to call, in significant part because we already had recorded on some significant transactions that occurred in the overall window, not only the Kyrie, but Poeltl and Kevin KD, obviously, and everything else. So if we're going with the trades that occurred since the last time we recorded, I'm going to go with the Clippers overall series of moves, in part because that incorporates Memphis, another team of significance that is involved in it. And so I think it's that, but I don't know. I'm not stumping for it. I don't think it's like a clear cut. Oh, it's obviously them.
Well, let's just talk about who is on the Clippers now. That's probably the easiest way to do it. And then we can backtrack to how we got there. The Clippers acquired Eric Gordon, a bunch of seconds for Luke Kennard. And then they also got Mason Plumlee in a separate move. Maybe they rerouted. They only sent 1 second for Mason
Correct.
Plumlee.
Their own in 28.
So, and sent out Reggie Jackson. So basically what they did, John Wall is back with the Rockets.
John Wall's salary is back on the Rockets. Let's put it that way.
Oh, they're not going to ask him to report?
I don't think they're going to make him take a physical.
And then, so basically they sent out Reggie Jackson and John Wall and Luke Kennard. They brought back Eric Gordon and Mason Plumlee. They open up a roster spot and they pocket some seconds is what happened here. So,
and they give up the marginal picks on that swap now. So basically the difference between their pick and the Milwaukee Bucks pick, whatever that ends up being.
Yeah, because the Houston had that. So that was basically the price for Eric Gordon, was, you know, moving up 5-6 spots and also sending back some expiring money. Yeah, what is this Clippers team now with Eric Gordon?
It's intriguing that simultaneously the Clippers added, and remember they also got Bones Highland.
Oh, yeah. All right. So they didn't open up a roster spot. No. they took Hyland into
the exception they had for Serge Ibaka.
A lot of stuff happened today.
It did. And so the Clippers simultaneously did two different things that seem incongruous, but might actually make sense together. One is Eric Gordon fits well in some of their switching approaches. That's something he, of course, did a ton with the Houston Rockets in their best iterations. And Gordon's not quite the same player as he was then. And we always forget about the passage of time. We often do for older players, and that does matter. However, they also added two players in Plumlee and Hyland who distinctly don't fit into that. And so maybe this leads Ty Lue to an approach where they have kind of like one switching group that presumably is something like Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Eric Gordon, Norm Powell, and then Covington, Batum, you know, kind of whoever you're going with that. And then they have iterations that Bones is in alongside one of their traditional centers, which is now just Zubats and Plumlee instead of just Zubats.
Gordon, to me, for this year, seems like by far the most significant piece. We did a scouting report on him, I think, on Tuesday. That's what day that was, right? Yes.
Whatever day that was.
And yeah, I think there are some iterations where Eric Gordon could be in their closing lineup. He's still, I think, we'll have to see how much he has left as a driver. Like, he is still, I think, can be an effective driver. Like, they did need someone who's going to put pressure on the rim. I think one of the more significant aspects of this trade is they tried this whole, hey, let's get a point guard in here, John Wall, pure point guard. They had Reggie Jackson. They moved both of their point guards. And they're really going to lean in now to Paul George and Kawhi as the primary creators. And then you've got Terrence Mann and Gordon as your other backcourt options. They also moved on from Kennard, who has some pick and roll ability. But I understand that. I think Eric Gordon, for their purposes, is better than Luke Kennard. You know, Luke Kennard might have been okay in like a series against Denver or something like that. But obviously, if they're going to do some switching, Kennard had a target. And so they now have even more ability to put lineups out there that are switchable and have more shooting with Gordon. Now, does Gordon have enough left to guard opposing point guards? Yeah, maybe that's Terrence Mann. And Gordon's like deep shooting, presuming he can get back to that, it provides an element that they didn't have. And hey, if they want to, Danny, they could either waive Gordon for next year and re-sign him if all goes well, or they could just guarantee his $20 million for next year. Also worth noting now that the guarantee, if his team wins the championship for Eric Gordon, is in play for the Clippers. So I think that aspect is good. You know, Kennard, I mean, they got a bunch of seconds for him. It's kind of funny that they remember.
Got a lot of seconds on the way in, got a lot of seconds on the way out.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because that was a contract that like we didn't love, but the league, Kennard has been shooting incredibly well. I mean, he's been basically the league leader in three-point shooting percentage the last couple of years. And Memphis will talk about this aspect of them getting Kennard as a bench guy. But, you know, I think Kennard, especially with some of the health problems that he'd had over the years, wasn't as much of a fit. So I'd probably rather have the seconds, although we'll talk about what seconds really get you these days. So then the other part of it you talked about is this Hyland Plumlee thing. The Hyland thing, that just seems to me more like, hey, he can create some shots for you when Paul George and Kawhi are out of the lineup. I don't see him having a huge role in the playoffs just due to his defensive concerns. But I think this is basically just a buy low for the Clippers on a guy that they think could be good down the road and is on a very cheap contract. That's more right, like, how I see this than he's going to help them this year.
This isn't, it is a buy remarkably low for the Clippers, because what they gave up was their own second and 24 and their own second and 25. The Nuggets didn't even get seconds in the years that we could expect the Clippers to be worse. Like they further out and everything else like that. Incidentally, Charlotte got one of those in the Mason Plumlee deal. But so for Denver, this is basically, you know, this is basically just like, let's get out of the Bones Highland business as opposed to really getting premium. So for the Clippers, as long as Steve Ballmer is willing to pay the money, sure. I mean, Highland can play, and he does not have so much equity that it makes waves for the Clippers if he's not in the starting or closing lineups, even if that's something that Highland wants. And so, yeah, I mean, I completely support that, even though I'm not a believer right now in Hyland as a playoff player, especially for where the Clippers want to go. They did not give up a ton to get him.
No, when I first saw this deal, I was like, did they, I mean, they didn't really have a first to give up. that, I mean, it would have been quite a waste to get him. And I was like, well, I've most often compared Bones Highland to Lou Williams with some very similar strengths, or shall we say lack of strength and weaknesses. But again, with this just kind of being more of a flyer, like, yeah, go ahead, grab him, see if you can develop him some. But
and you know, remember, Highland, his second of 4 years on a rookie scale deal. It's not like he's a pending, you know, like a Cam Reddish situation where he's a pending restricted free agent that you're just like, you're not sure you're going to give a qualifying offer to him.
Yeah, and for I guess we'll get to the Denver portion of that in a second. Plumlee, to me, the point of acquiring another center is that you have rim protection. Like, why would you want to be playing a center except that he gives you rim protection in a way that another player doesn't in most matchups? There is one potential matchup, maybe even two, although I think they should try to space out DeAndre Ayton if they play the Suns. But Plumlee is familiar with Nikola Jokic. I don't think Mason Plumlee is going to be able to guard Nikola Jokic. But I mean, maybe that's just the thought. It's like in that matchup, they needed one more guy that they can just throw out there who's not going to get totally steamrolled. And the price at least was low. I'm just concerned that they're going to play Plumlee too much at the expense of the five out lineups rather than making him just like a pure specialist.
Well, yes, that is a reasonable fear
And he's not that special at the specialist thing. So, and there's also the idea of like, are they going to like, he's going to try to post up. They're going to like try to run offense through him. Like he can't just kind of like stay out of the way on offense. Like he's not built that way. So I'm very prepared to be extremely annoyed at him playing too much and the way that he plays when he's out there.
It would not be the first time the Clippers overplaying a backup center gave them problems in a playoff series.
Although Mason Plumlee coming in as a defensive replacement at the end of a game against the Nuggets would be absolutely hilarious. So yeah, let's go back to the Denver thing here with Bones. I mean, this kind of seems like a fail to me, honestly. And the idea that you wouldn't, like, with this price, okay, he's clashing with Michael Malone, whatever, he's going to complain. He's so irrelevant. Just keep him around. Maybe he can help you. Maybe you can rehabilitate him. Maybe he'd have more value in the summer. What if Jamal Murray gets injured the rest of the year? Or, you know, even if you want to rest him more and you want to keep fighting for the number one seed, or you want to get a home court advantage in the NBA Finals. Just like, this is, they've done a couple of these moves here where it's just like, if you could just fucking get along.
They don't owe Bones Highland the right to play, to be somewhere that he's happy. They drafted him.
Now he may not be happy with the Clippers, honestly. I don't know how he's going to have some huge role with them either, but still. So I mean, maybe there was a thought like, hey, he's just killing us, but for a guy who came into this season with this much promise in theory, it's just like, you didn't have to trade him. Like, this deal sucks. You could have just held on to him. There's just a much greater chance that Bones Highland could have somehow been rehabilitated, maybe traded for more later. I mean, I don't think they were going to get a first for him. Like, I talked pretty extensively about that. Like, you're not going to trade a first for a guy who's going to be a starter, like for a guy who's not going to be a starter. And I don't think he is going to be a starter, but it just, hey, he's like, he could help them in theory. Like, he had like what, like a 20 point quarter in the playoffs last year in game four against the Warriors. Like, even that is worth more than these two shitty seconds that they got, which, I mean, maybe those seconds will be used to dump guys for tax money. Maybe that's what it'll end up being. But
well, and anyway, they also gave up seconds in another deal that we'll talk about later.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the Clippers standpoint of this. Charlotte.
Oh, I want to go to Memphis next.
But well, I just because Charlotte, you can close the book on them pretty easily. So let's just finish with that.
Sure.
The 2028 Clippers for Plumlee. I think that's fine. They just need to play Kai Jones. They're going to be tanking. They need to play Mark Williams. They need to play Nick Richards. So just giving up Plumlee for whatever you could get is just what they should have done. This is what they could get. I mean, Plumlee's been a good vet there. Maybe they wanted to send him somewhere where he could win. I don't know what other offers there were. It's not surprising to me that there weren't better offers than this. Maybe some people were hoping for 2 seconds for Plumlee, but they're just, you know, who needed Mason Plumlee in the end? I guess not that many teams. So, I mean, this is fine for Charlotte. I think the fact that they, and they moved Jalen McDaniels as well, which we'll talk about later, but I just, to not be able to move more guys than that maybe is a little bit disappointing for them. But hey, they moved two guys. They showed at least somewhat of a pulse at the deadline.
Oh, it is that time again. Wedding season. Indochino's
custom suits will have you walking into a wedding looking like $1 million, feeling like $1 million, because their suits are custom made to fit you perfectly. You can get a tailored fit from the comfort of your home. You can set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website, choose customizations without even leaving the house. Indochino was the official outfitter of my wedding. I got a tux from them. All my groomsmen got custom fitted sport jackets, and I'd like to think we all look great. Order your custom suit now. Be ready for wedding season, whether it's at home or in person at a showroom near you, which I actually recommend. That's what I did. An Indochino style guide can walk you through all of the amazing customizations that they have. The lapels, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. You can feel the fabrics in person. That's definitely the best way to do it, in my opinion. But you can also do it from home as well. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com. Use that familiar Capspace code to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com. I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O. Indochino.com. Don't forget that Capspace code to let them know you came from us. Renters, you ever feel like you're stuck in this loop of rent payments, just watching your money vanish into thin air? It's time to turn that rent game around and start earning some serious rewards. That's where Built Rewards comes in. Built is breaking ground as the first rewards program that hooks you up with points on your rent. Even if you're still rocking the old school rent check vibes, Built Rewards has got your back. They'll mail the check for you. It's like having a personal rent paying assistant. Every month, pay your rent and watch the Built points roll in. Use points to jet off on a dream vacation. Put your points towards a flight or hotel stay with 500 plus airlines and 700,000 plus hotels and properties. You can also use your points towards a future rent payment or towards a future down payment on a home. Pay rent hassle-free through the Built Rewards app. Your rent game just got a major upgrade. Earn points by paying rent right now when you go to joinbuilt.com/capspace. That's joinbuilt, B-I-L-T, joinbuilt.com/capspace. Don't forget that /capspace URL. Yeah, let's talk about the Memphis component here.
Memphis in this functionally trades Danny Green and looks like 4 second-round picks for Luke Kennard. And Kennard, as you mentioned, more popular in certain NBA ranks than in, I think, either of ours individually or collectively. And he, you know, capable shooter. I think he can do more with the ball in his hands than the Clippers asked him to do. But limited defensively and basically a one position defender if he really defends any position. And so for Memphis, it's not like it's the combination of giving up a player who has like a more clear role. I mean, we don't know exactly how much Danny Green has at this juncture, but Kennard, like, I don't see him as a playoff player for them, specifically when Ja Morant is not a great defender at his position and they already have Desmond Bain and everything else. So it's just like, I don't think they didn't give up too much to make it happen because the salaries are close and Kennard does have a fully guaranteed wage next year and those seconds aren't phenomenal. But why him?
Yeah, I guess having him under contract for 2 more years is an appeal. He is a really good shooter. They need more shooting. But yeah, you're hoping Desmond Bane is playing 40 minutes a game in the playoffs. I think certainly during the regular season, he's going to help them quite a bit, particularly because Bane has been dealing with these knee issues.
Yeah, and they've missed having that guy a lot, a functional second shooting guard.
Yeah, and maybe you feel like they're not going to do a lot of switching anyway. You've got Jaren Jackson behind all these guys. Maybe you can make it work on defense. It just, and maybe their judgment was just that Danny Green just wasn't going to be able to help them that much. And maybe this is also just about the fact that Luke Kennard is under contract for a little bit longer, and that's something that they value. But I certainly, if you wanted to look at like the top needs for the Memphis Grizzlies, I wouldn't have said going after Luke Kennard would have been like near the top of my list, because they already have a guy who's awesome at that position.
Memphis also, like, I think they're going to be fine overall for next year, but this does make their books more complicated in terms of if Dylan Brooks gets a significant new contract. It's presumably not going to be extension. Also, the Grizzlies took on some money in this, so they can't do a slight renegotiation and then extension off of that with Dylan Brooks. I didn't expect that to happen in the first place. I thought it was a good idea by John Hollinger, but I didn't expect it to happen. I'm not sure that he did either. But now, like, so for if Dylan Brooks gets, you know, much more than $20 million, the math on this gets tough. They have guys they could offload.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to.
No, I don't either.
But
and so since this was the only move that Memphis made. This feels like another bet on their draft evaluation on their development, because whether you thought of that as a significant need or not, you know, this, they're going to have to be relying on Brooks, on Zaire Williams, on conceptually either maybe Laravia or Roddy or Conchar, depending on who kind of steps up. And they didn't get anyone else to try to fill that gap either now or in the future.
Yeah, maybe this is, they view Luke Kennard as having some point guard skills, and he and Bain could play together, or and he's got at least a little more size than Tyus Jones, and maybe Tyus Jones is someone that they would move in the offseason or something. So, but this is just yet another player that has a weakness that's not going to be great in the playoffs. You criticized their draft for that. I agree. We talked again about how, just the Grizz overall not like going for it in any way, and just not bolstering their rotation with reliable players. Like, they have three guys to me that are, you know, Ja, Jaren, and Bane, that I'm 100% confident in a playoff series, and everyone else has enough flaws where you're like, now maybe you can just cobble it together. Like, they have a lot of guys with different strengths and weaknesses, but they're just, they need one more like rock solid guy to me.
And they have the resources to do it. Like, not a circumstance where they've traded out 10 picks in the future and do anything other. That they have this capacity, and it's not like they're going to be able to use cap space at any point in the near term. It's just they believe in their players, and that's part of why they've extended so many of them.
Yeah, and even just thinking about some of the matchups that they may have in the West, I just would have liked more players who could, you know, if they play the Suns, who's going to guard Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, or the Warriors, or, you know, they don't really have a great guy to guard Nikola Jokic right now. Adams usually hasn't been very good against us. So they're just kind of, maybe they're just moving more towards this idea of just outscoring teams. But yeah, so just it's more, this isn't even necessarily the Kennard move. It's more just the lack of a larger move, which again, that'll be one of our big themes that we talk about after this. Well, all right, so we're good.
I want to follow up a little bit with Houston. So for Houston, yes, okay. They got that upgrade in first round pick for Eric Gordon, and they took on no money beyond this season. It's certainly not what they could have gotten a couple of years ago. And I think that the difference between, you know, let's call it the 27th pick and the 22nd pick is not as significant. Like, it helps, but, you know, I don't know that they could have done much better. Like, I don't think they were going to get a pure first out of this deal, and I don't know that they could have changed a second into a first like they did previously. So it's both understandable and also a little bit underwhelming from their perspective, though I'm thrilled for Eric Gordon that he gets to be on a relevant team again.
Yeah, and I think this is about as good as they were going to do for Gordon, and they were able to take back in the end just pretty much expiring money, which you didn't think that, like, they have these cap space aspirations. If they wanted to give James Harden a full max contract, they couldn't afford to take on much for next year. And so, I mean, to move up, you know, 8 spots in the draft or whatever, like, that's 5 spots in the draft for Eric Gordon. And that's solid creativity, I think, both by the Clippers and Houston. We've seen a similar transaction take place for Victor Oladipo and PJ Tucker, where they use swaps to get some equity without it having to be, this is a first rounder specifically, because their guys just weren't worth that in the end. And finally, Eric Gordon's been a decent organizational soldier for them. And so I think moving him somewhere that he wanted to be, back to the team that drafted him, the Clippers, way back in 2008, is doing him a solid. So yeah, just getting the value for him that you could, and this is another one where, hey, if you really wanted to get him back in the offseason, you could re-sign him if you bring back Harden, and that's like part of the deal or whatever. So I kind of like moving up 5 slots in the first more than, apparently that's worth more than some of these seconds, at least to me at this point, that have been thrown around like candy. Then there's this salary dump deal between Houston and Atlanta. What are the terms of that?
The Houston Rockets traded Garrison Matthews and Bruno Fernando for Justin Holiday, Frank Kaminsky, and then 2 second round picks. They're from Atlanta, but they're Oklahoma City's in 24 and 25. And so from Houston's perspective, they get a couple of seconds to offload players who may not have been in their plans. I'm a little bit surprised about the Garrison Matthews component of it, because yes, it's true that Bruno Fernando and Garrison Matthews have no guaranteed money beyond this year, but Garrison Matthews, you know, it's basically flat $2 million that eventually guarantees for each season. Like, he can help out either of these teams, and Houston's going to have a roster crunch issue. But You have that. And then Fernando, I mean, he's started at times for them, but this is obviously Shane Goon's center position for at least the present, depending on what happens in the draft. And so for Atlanta, it's saving some money. And for Houston, it's taking on some money for two second round picks of I guess, some providence.
Yeah, Bruno Fernando, so much RIP him impressing in camp and starting the season as the start. He actually goes back to the team that drafted him in the early 30s. I
think he was 34. So many of those over the trade deadline season.
Yeah, and I like this for Atlanta. Now, they had to give up a lot of seconds in this deal and their other deals. And let's start first actually with the tax savings for Atlanta. This is after they got Sadiq Bey. They were over the tax. They had to get under. So they save about $3.5 million to get below the tax. They should be fine. Woj described it as a, quote, cost-cutting move for the Hawks, which is when he adds that kind of analysis, that usually means he doesn't particularly care for the GM. They fired a guy who gave him a lot, Travis Schlenk. That's the best I could come up with as to why he would say that when he never adds that kind of analysis most of the time. But I think this actually is more than a cost-cutting move, because I think Garrison Matthews can help it. Like, they have missed just a really good shooter. Like, is he going to play over AJ Griffin? Maybe not, but they could even play Griffin at the threesome. They got Sadiq Bey too. So I don't know if Matthews is going to play, but he at least like plays hard and like he'll stick his nose in there, take some charges. They need that element. So like, I think he can help them more than the guys they sent out in this deal, Holiday and Kaminsky. But it's mostly about the tax savings. Giving up 2 seconds for Garrison Matthews is not
great. It's mostly about the money, but Landry Fields can evaluate at the kind of the beginning of each offseason, because they're early guarantee dates for Garrison Matthews, whether he wants to keep him around at $2 million. I think the answer to that should be yes, at least knowing what I know now for 23-24. We'll see for 24-25. They don't have to make that decision right now. And, you know, capable rotation player, particularly if somebody gets injured. So, and an important emphasis here, because we'll see other moves of this bent. You not only save the money that you would have paid in the luxury tax when you get out of the tax, but you also get the payment from the teams that pay the tax. So the difference for owners is even more significant. And of course, that then trickles down to general managers and everything else. And then for the Rockets, they got a couple of seconds for their trouble. I am excited to see Frank Kaminsky get signed again by James Jones and the Suns once he clears waivers, because it's a tale as old as time. And yeah, so I think it's a reasonable transaction. And Garrison Matthews, as much as I think he can be a capable player, I don't think his value to the Rockets was so high that it would like prevent a deal like this, even if it was salary first.
So now we get to the other Hawks move, and they acquired Sadiq Bey without giving up a first round pick. Now, we don't know exactly what these seconds are that went out and where they all came from necessarily either. Maybe some of it came from Detroit in the Wiseman Bey swap. This would have had the Hawks sending out 7 second round picks. Did they even have 7 second round picks to send out, including those 2 OKC ones from the Dennis Schroeder deal?
Yes, they do. By the way, they do have that many seconds to send out.
Yeah, but I think, you know, getting Sadiq Bey, like, Sadiq Bey is a fascinating player in a lot of ways. Like, he was such a darling his rookie year. Then he struggled to shoot at the start of last year. Came on, seemed like he was back on track. But now with Bojan Bogdanovic and the Troy Weaver big man fetish, had been coming off the bench in Detroit. It hadn't shot it amazing well. Again, is starting to maybe settle in more like a mid-30s three-point shooter rather than 40% like we saw early on. And then what you think of his defense is another question. I think he is a little slow of foot, a little heavy leg. He's strong. He's never really had to defend on a real team. He's going to be asked to do a lot more of that now with the Hawks. And so, yeah, getting him for the Hawks to, in theory, upgrade some of their shooting. You can go smaller now, not have to play John Collins, still on the team, if you don't want to, and have some more defensive versatility. DeAndre Hunter is injured a lot. You can even play Bay at the 2 potentially when Trey or DeJounte sits. Just upgrading that backup 4 slot, backup 3 slot, where they just were terrible at some of the worst guys in the league there, with the likes of Justin Holiday and Jalen Johnson, who, I'm fine with them giving Jalen Johnson a shot at that job. He's not ready to help them win. So Bay is clearly an upgrade. He's still on a rookie contract. they'll get a chance to look at him. Although, you know, and we'll see. There have been a lot of 3-and-D guys over the years who kind of flashed early. You know, one guy who comes to mind would be like Justin Anderson, for example. Now, I think he dealt with some other issues, including injury, over the course of his career. But sometimes these guys, they just hit more shots than they ultimately are going to settle in on, and they become kind of a hot name early. And it's, oh, what a great draft pick this was. Like, this guy, we drafted this guy. You know, he was a 3-4-year college player. He's helping us immediately. Amazing pick. And then they just kind of, maybe they weren't as good defensively. Maybe they weren't as good a shooter as you thought. And all of a sudden, they kind of just peter out and they end up being a bench guy in the end. So we'll see what ends up happening with Bay in that regard.
I like Sadiq Bay more than most of them, but it is a completely fair note that there is a history of these players, and we'll just have to kind of see where Bay fits into all that. But from Atlanta's perspective of this weird deal, which we still don't know the exact structure, and you brought up the seconds that we don't know. We also don't know the exact structure because it could be functioning as a series of 2-team deals, a 3-team deal, or a 4-team deal. But from Atlanta, I mean, we don't know the seconds they gave up, but Sadiq Bey is reasonably priced for a couple of years. He steps into the rotation. He could even potentially be in some closing fives for them, depending on what happens with a few other things over the next year or two. Also, he'll be extension eligible and restricted, theoretically absent an extension, in 24-25, which might actually be a good time because that's not going to be the year that everyone's going to have cap space. So maybe it's a little bit tighter around then, or you could trade him to somebody else. So like, I like this as a piece of business for the Hawks, depending on whether the seconds they give up are super juicy, but my instinct is that they're not. And
finishing up here on the Hawks, the other component of this again is their finances for next year. So if Bogdan Bogdanovic opts into his $18 million, they are $9 million over the tax, $15 million tax payment, and that doesn't seem like something this team would be interested in. And they don't have an obvious place to cut money unless they were to move John Collins or
they're $9 million over the tax, are you counting some of the non-guarantees as being guaranteed?
Yeah, but then they're also, they would have to fill those roster spots too. So it's not really much savings to move on from like a Fernando or a Matthews or a Vit Krejci. Like, they'll get someone else in at relatively similar costs to those guys. But they still, and now I think another reason that they did this is they didn't move Bogdan this year. Supposedly they got calls on him, and I don't think it didn't seem like any of those talks really got serious. But Bay maybe is insurance in case they do lose Bogdan next year if he opts out of that $18 million player option. It seems like he probably would, but you never know how his injury situation is looking and all that stuff. So, and what his market would be. I don't know if the team would be like trying to pay him $18 million for next year to come in as a starter. That's we'll see. So that's another component of this, is they needed another guy on the wing. But, you know, Bogdan is one of their best shooters. Him coming back and actually starting to play okay has been part of why they've been a little bit better lately. So that component is, be like, there's still more financial moves. They're gonna, one of probably Collins, Capella, or Bogdan is gonna not be on this team next year. And I guess this is to finish up on Atlanta before we move to the rest of this crazy 4-team deal. John Collins is still on this team.
Yeah, he is. And it seemed likely to me that that was going to happen with the idea. I mean, we got the reporting from Shams that Landry Fields saw him as a positive player. And so that, you know, that generally, if there weren't trades before with what sounds like a front office that was less enthusiastic about Collins, then, you know, that's the way it was going to go. And Collins is, you know, it's a reasonable contract. We talked about him in the scouting stuff before, but he'll be on the trade block, or at least in the rumor mill, in June, July. And then if he's still on the Hawks, in January, February of next year.
Yeah, the Hawks are keeping John Collins tweet at 11:57 a.m. Pacific time is a yearly tradition unlike any other.
I mean, that and the Damian Lillard is staying in Portland, is committed to Portland, and Miles Turner is still on the Pacers. they're like,
well, that actually got resolved before the deadline.
Well, it theoretically could have gone differently, but yeah, it is pretty amazing.
Are you waking up with a ton of back pain or shoulder pain or neck pain? The number one reason probably to consider is your mattress. Maybe it's time for a new mattress. And I highly recommend that you check out Helix Sleep, which you can do risk-free with their 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty, depending on the model. And they have 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, the Ultra Premium Elite Collections. They have Helix Plus, which is designed for big and tall sleepers. Helix Kids, endorsed by child sleep experts. You can take their 2-minute sleep quiz. That's what my wife and I did over 10 years ago now. We still have a number of Helix Sleep mattresses that we've gotten over the years, and we are extremely satisfied with them even now, 10 years later. You might be like, I kind of want to try it out beforehand. Going to the store is not really going to give you any information. You're going to be like, lay down, like, oh, do I take off my shoes? Maybe I should leave my shoes on, but then I got to have my feet hanging off the mattress because I can't leave my shoes on and sleep normally on this mattress. And then you're going to feel awkward laying there after about 30 seconds. Like, you can't determine anything in 30 seconds. So you're going to have to take it home, and you might as well just get it delivered straight to your door and utilize that 100-night trial. And there's never been a better time to use Helix because they are offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. You can go to helixsleep.com/capspace. Use the /capspace. We talk about all the time here on the program. That's helixsleep.com/capspace. This is their best offer yet. It won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. So I will be honest, I tend to pack on the pounds a little bit during the winter, holiday season, not getting outside as much. So in springtime, I try to eat healthier, and I'm really excited to try Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Each meal is fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. This is going to be fantastic for me during the playoffs, when a lot of times I feel like I don't have time to eat healthy, and now I can choose from a number of their delicious but healthy options. I like to go keto. On occasion, they have that. They have vegan and veggie options as well. Here's what they've got for their keto weekly menu this week. Sun-dried tomato chicken with zucchini noodles. Spicy poblano beef bowl with roasted broccoli. Chicken piccata with cauliflower mash and broccoli. Or if you want to go their chef's choice weekly menu, jalapeno lime cheddar chicken. That sounds fantastic. Greek lemon chicken with roasted potatoes. This all sounds really, really good. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up, heat, and savor the good stuff. And they're also celebrating Earth Day all month long as well. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/dunked50, special code for this one. That's factormeals.com/dunked50, and use the code dunked50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code dunked50 at factormeals.com/dunked50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And that, I think the place to go there is the Golden State Warriors. And in part, just to tell people the story, I think the sequence of events here is so fascinating because how this got reported is originally James Wiseman for Sadiq Bey. Then Sadiq Bey goes to Atlanta. So then it's James Wiseman for savings and picks. And then eventually it becomes James, from the Warriors' perspective, James Wiseman for Gary Payton II. And that is really striking when you think about the egos involved, the admission that this is for ownership, for the front office, that they had, you know, they had the second pick in the draft and they took a player who now they gave up. That basically they gave up for, if you think about it in the end game iteration of this, a player that they could have just signed on their own to this exact contract and chose not to over the summer. So basically the Warriors are admitting to two failures in this. Admitting to failures does not make it a bad move in and of itself. It probably makes the other ones bad moves, if you want to think about it that way. But it is stunning when you think about the, like, this, the scale that the Warrior stuff, the two timelines and everything else, and that around this period, they also, you know, won a championship.
Yeah, now you might say, hey, like, they fucked this up. They should have just matched that deal from Portland and kept him. But let's keep in mind, they are actually saving money in this deal now. The deal keeping Payton, and now they probably don't sign DiVincenzo if they keep Payton, by the way. And so that's another way to look at this too. They now have both DiVincenzo, who's played well for them, and Payton So that's kind of part of the calculation here too. But they didn't ultimately add just another $8.5 million on top of James Wiseman. They subtracted James Wiseman's salary. If they had just re-signed GP, they wouldn't have DiVincenzo, and they would have still needed to dump salary. I mean, the extra amount of money they would have had on the books, it would have been like probably another $5 million or so with no DiVincenzo, but also Peyton. It was $4.5 million. So there is that component of it. And also, for like, it was worth it for them to get a look at what James Wiseman could do over this period of time. I don't think there was, I don't know that they even could have gotten like a first for him if they had moved him this summer necessarily. I think it was worth trying to keep him around. I mean, it's crazy that he's gone after this few number of games, and thinking about what they could have had for him instead. But given the finance, I mean, that's the biggest thing that was so interesting to me, though, is just I almost would have understood this move more when they were just getting the 5 seconds directly for James Wiseman. And so
that's funny you say that, because I thought the best iteration of this for the Warriors was Sadiq Bey, because Bey is, he's cost controlled for 2 years. He's not a perfect fit in the rotation, could help them. And, you know, the years that are most expensive for Golden State before like Klay Thompson's deal expires, Bey's making, you know, like low first round pick salaries. And what we don't know what the seconds are going, either the ones going from the Hawks to the Warriors or the ones going from the Warriors to the Blazers. They could be the same seconds. They could be different seconds. We don't know yet. But generally speaking, like, I think Sadiq Bey could have helped them, could have been a part of the rotation.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. It doesn't seem like there's anything they could have moved the 5 seconds for that would have been better than Peyton. I think Peyton helps them more than Bey would have. Bey, for all the reasons I just talked about with Atlanta, is a question mark. He's just not proven in that crucible. And like, would Bey have been in their closing lineup? I don't know. Peyton might actually be in their closing lineup. He's proven. They're like, they have to get better defensively. You know, I don't know that Bey would have made them much better defensively. Like, he's just kind of a guy there. Like, you're hoping that he's more just not going to get attacked than that he's going to like really help you. He's just more of like a cog in the machine.
Sure. You know, I'm also thinking player plus savings and all that type of stuff. If Joe Lacob doesn't care about the money, then I mean, we know how good of a fit Gary Payton II is. And
yeah, I don't think the money would have worked with just Wiseman and Bey, right? I think they would have. Then they would have also ended up with Kevin Knox.
I mean, you said Knox,
that's part of this too. Like, they got Portland to take Kevin Knox,
or Indiana, they took on a bunch of different guys.
It's like getting Gary Payton II back now. This is a message. Like, yeah, okay, they saved some money, but it wasn't crazy substantial. The savings for, particularly when you consider that Gary Payton II is actually under contract longer than James Wiseman, and who knows how much longer Gary Payton II is going to have left, given his injury issues, his age now being 30, declining athleticism. And there's the reasons they didn't want to sign him to that contract to begin with, right? If it had only been 2 years, maybe they would have just done it. So you know, that's an issue. I think maybe they feel after next year, Clay will probably be on a new contract or gone, and you know, Draymond, that situation will be worked out, and maybe they'll have traded Poole by that point as well. That's another interesting aspect of this, Danny. Now they're probably going to lose DiVincenzo in the offseason, you would think, but that perhaps this is a little bit of insurance too on the guard line if they move on from Jordan Poole in the offseason as a way to make all the salary work. In any event, like, this is a message to the veterans that, hey, we're really going for it this year. Like, we traded the guy who was the foremost face of the two timeline approach for a guy who is probably like, he's going to help us most this year going forward. And his contract situation is not really any better than Wiseman's is, although Wiseman would have made 12 last year and Peyton's going to make 9 or whatever. So they saved some, but it's not like some massive savings going forward here. So yeah,
not like the $131 million it would have been. If not, that would have been if they got out of Wiseman entirely. That was, John Hollinger had a piece on that for The Athletic. Yeah. I believe that was.
Now, I'm always a little bit loath talking about those type of savings.
Agreed.
Specificity for next year. I mean, we could have a new CBA. The bands could be totally different. Like, they could have moved Wiseman in the offseason, you know. So, but certainly the savings for this year would have been massive.
Yeah, the savings for this year would have been massive. And also the other thing for those sorts of transactions is you're adding financial flexibility to make another move that's going to cost you a lot of money. Like, theoretically you do that, then you maybe use the taxpayer mid-level or something like that, and you add a player in that, but you're not saving that money in the same sense.
And Draymond has a player option. He could just leave in the offseason, you know. So I, that was a little like, I mean, that is theoretically, if everything stayed the same, what the savings would have been. But I didn't look at it as like, oh, this is for sure they're saving this. But they open up the ability to do some different stuff in theory if they had not taken anything back. But they have Gary Payton II now. So this Golden State rotation is really interesting. Gary Payton II is really almost a four for them offensively, but a one defensively. And
which
so,
they need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a guy who's like kind of in their closing lineup. Like he might be, and he's just a different level of defender than DiVincenzo. DiVincenzo is solid, like pressuring the ball, but he's not like bothering Ja Morant. Like Gary Payton II, Ja Morant is like, he's looking for a screen when Gary Payton is on him. And when Dante DiVincenzo is on him, he's like, yeah, I can take this guy. So like if Gary Payton II is going to give them what he gave them last year, good move. I'm just not sure of that, particularly he's had the surgery. He says he's still suffering from some pain. I'm sure they've really locked in on the scouting of what he has been in Portland and feel like he can still help them. And you would think there's someone else who could have helped them for 5 second round picks as well, had they wanted to go that route.
There's also the note, I'm sure some Warriors partisans are lamenting that they didn't have Payton for this whole year. You know who else didn't have Payton for this whole year so far? The Portland Trailblazers, because of all the time they missed. So, and that injury, it's not like you can argue, oh, that injury wouldn't have happened if he was on the Warriors. Like, that's just the way these things go.
I mean, I think he had been dealing with this injury for years.
Right.
Beforehand. So as we look at the Golden State rotation now, like they just needed that defensive edge that they just didn't have this year that he provides. The turnovers, like they played at an incredible level defensively in the playoffs last year, and he was a big part of that. So, and they're also like, they haven't been getting as much from Andrew Wiggins. Maybe there's a concern there. So they just have they're pretty goddamn deep now, adding another guy like him. Jonathan Kuminga might be playable, but they're not relying on him to be like their Ja Morant stopper in the playoffs at this point in time. So they just have a lot of options. And now the one guy who's probably, they don't have to play Anthony Lamb anymore. Now they may even just get out of having to convert him at this point. In fact, they are still on 14 players, so maybe they convert Lamb, you know, the last like 2 days of the season or something like that. Like that's probably what happens with this remaining roster slot. And so they could play Gary Payton II in place of DiVincenzo. If they need more shooting, they can go with DiVincenzo. If they need even more scoring than that, they can go with Jordan Poole. Like this, again, is going to minimize Jordan Poole's role even more, I think, particularly because, and they went back to their starting group from last year. They tried Poole in the starting lineup. It didn't work. This is maybe an acknowledgement that like, hey, we got to get better defensively. We got to get back to defending like the Warriors, and we'll just let Steph and Clay kind of handle the offense. And Jordan, you can play 18 minutes a game like you did last playoffs in the end.
There are lots of different ways this could go, but if the Warriors, I've had this idea, I regret that I never published it for The Athletic. I actually have the piece written from November, that it may end up being that Jordan Poole is the guy who gets traded for them to save money, not Draymond, like Draymond Green. We'll see what kind of contract Draymond Green gets. This, to me, bolsters that argument, even though the Warriors will need shot creation and Poole can be, of course, better than he has been so far this year.
So we'll finish up here with the Detroit aspect of this trade, and then we can go to Portland and fold in the Thibault, Charlotte, Philly three-way. So Sadiq Bey for James Wiseman. What do you think?
As a value proposition, I can kind of see it. Wiseman, even though I don't see that like high level elite upside, we talked about some of the shakiness with Sadiq Bey. However, there are two reasons why this is a both unsurprising, but also just like kind of frustrating trade from the perspective of the Pistons. One is there is a massive salary difference. And even though cap space, all that kind of stuff is less valuable for a place that hasn't really been a free agent destination in modern vintage, you know, James Wiseman makes 9.6 this year, 12.1 next year. That 12.1 matters a lot more, and then he's restricted, and we'll see what happens there. But also because Troy Weaver has committed so much to center-only players already, or let's call them non-defensively versatile bigs, because if you want to throw in... Yeah,
but well, they've Bagley. Got the market cornered on left-handed centers who really disappointed as former number two overall picks.
Yeah, let's see if they can expand that, and they'll sign Hasheem Thabeet or a few others in the future. Hasheem,
Hasheem left-handed?
No, he's right-handed. I was thinking of the disappointing bigs who went number two.
Yeah, but is Derek Williams funny. Available?
Yeah, and so for them,
Darko Milicic. left-handed, disappointing number two overall center.
So from Detroit's perspective, I mean, if you think Wiseman can be that guy, by all means, but they already have Jalen Duren, and Duren's been intriguing. I don't think I've seen so much from him to say, you can't put another player at the position. Like, if Wiseman ends up being better than Duren, great. Like, that's a good problem to have. Or it's a really bad problem to have, but depending on which way that happens. And then they also have Bagley, which is this weird thing where he's still going to get 12.5 mil for another 2 years after this year. He can't
MB 3 years, 37 million, baby.
Oh, Jesus. And so you have all those guys together. I don't really factor Nerlens Noel into this because he's a functionally a pending expiring contract because of that team
he's going to get bought out.
He should. And so you have that from Detroit's perspective. It's like, if you want to trade a forward that you're not sure is a like starting caliber player for you, who's been kind of weirdly bouncing around the rotation, even though you could use somebody who could play kind of in that skill set, you're allowed to make that trade. And if you want to roll the dice on a talented player that hasn't really gotten his shot due to injuries and due to the team that he plays on, you could do it. But the Pistons being the Wiseman destination, it's both unsurprising and disappointing because there's so much overlap, and I don't think they have the right talent to make his game sing. Like, they don't have that pick and roll operator unless it ends up being Alec Burks for the rest of this year.
Well, presumably they did this in part to keep him around for next year, and just the chance for him to develop in a low pressure environment is nice. Now, you mentioned it's not exactly a great environment for his skill set when they're going to just be playing Isaiah Stewart exclusively at the four at this point. So they certainly have a logjam there. I do think, though, for where the Pistons are, that James Wiseman makes more sense than Sadiq Bey. Now, Wiseman makes a lot more money, too. The Pistons reduce their cap space for next year by $7 million or so, I think. But that's not the end of the world. If they really needed to make more, they could move on from Alec Burks in the offseason. They still have $27.8 million even now. Enough for Jeremy Grant, possibly? James Edwards did report that to look out for that. We'll see. In any event, though, I've seen more from Wiseman recently. The rare times he's been on the floor, I think he's really improved his touch around the basket, and I think he's had flashes of like semi-competence defensively, but then of course he'll get hurt and come back and it's like he's starting from square 1.1, and it's just he can't get into a rhythm, and hopefully he'll have a chance to do that. He is healthy now, apparently, and so like I think he still has more upside than Duren. You know, I think Duren is a higher floor player at this point due to like his switchability. I mean, they both have a lot of athleticism, but I didn't think Duren, like you said, has shown so much that there's no reason to bring another guy in. And both those guys, I think, could just learn to play really hard in fewer minutes. And let's see. Like, and I think, you know, maybe we'll see some post-ups for James Wiseman. We'll see if he can be effective that way as well. They'll probably encourage him to shoot some threes. We'll see. So we'll just get a chance to kind of see him explore the studio space. I think for where the Pistons are, that I think that he makes more sense than Sadiq Bey. This is something we kind of talked about. It's just like, they're not good right now. Like, what do you need a guy with Bey's theoretical skill set for in the future? Like, and he's just kind of a guy who can plug into a rotation. Maybe he's a second perimeter defender and second best shooter on the wing. Like, they're so far away. Having that guy just doesn't really change your ceiling. And frankly, maybe if they weren't going to start Bey the rest of the season, like his star is kind of fallen, maybe they sold high on Bey at this point if he does take that career path that I think is maybe a possibility for him in Atlanta.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
We should talk, though, about the Pistons not moving Boyan and Alec Burks, though.
This does tie in. I mean, the conversation that Bogdanovich had with Mike Scotto talked about, but like his kind of the inclinations he had gotten from the Pistons front office was that their intention was to keep this group together potentially for the start of next season. It's only they're only committed to it for the rest of this season, but Bojan Bogdanovic, Alec Burks, both still around. Both of them can be traded in the 23 offseason because Bogdanovic, he agreed to that extension. So he's $20 million for next year and then 19, which is only partially guaranteed for the year after. And then Burks has that $10.5 million team option, which as of now, I think would be very likely to be picked up. And hopefully there's not an injury that would happen there. And so from Detroit's perspective, the key delineation here is Could they get more for those players in June, July than they were offered now? And we don't know exactly what they were offered now. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit underwhelming considering we didn't see a single true first go in the last.
You're talking about what actually was offered for these guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, I thought the Pistons stance was reasonable that I wouldn't have taken less than an unprotected or very lightly protected first with some upside for Boyan. And maybe they didn't have that. I think that was a mistake for particularly the Milwaukee Bucks. I went after Boyan as the Milwaukee Bucks. So that's why I feel that way. You know, I'm not sure that the Lakers at this point should have also thrown in their 29 unprotected first to get Boyan. Like they kind of have enough shooting now. So I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that really it would have made sense for them to go after him. It didn't make sense for the Nets anymore.
Didn't make sense for the Mavs anymore.
Well, he might have, it seems like that would have been too much to go after a guy his age when they already got a 30-year-old in Kyrie. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what other contender. The Suns just didn't have the assets to get him anymore. There was a thought maybe they could try to go after him. Yeah, I mean, there's not really, other than the Bucks, there really, to me, wasn't the obvious team for Boyan. So maybe that's why he's still there. But there's also reporting that, it's very easy for them to say, hey, we want to keep him when you weren't getting offers that would have made you want to move him to begin with. Now, it's much better to just say, well, we're going to keep him. So like we never wanted to trade him to begin with. And same thing for Burks. I think there's the way he's played this year and the fact that they're hoping to take a step forward next year, they're going to have another pick that's quite high. And so I think they're just like, hey, Boyan, Burks, like they can help us. We get Cade back. We get another high draft pick and then we'll see where we're at next year. Obviously, it's been a very disappointing season for them. But I would also say, like, don't overplay Burks and Boyan too much. Like, let's not get him hurt. Let's just have him be fresh going into next year. And I guess, you know, we'll see in the off season.
By the way, I'm seeing some murmurs now that Troy Weaver intend to start James Wiseman. So we may actually get this sample.
Okay, let's turn to the Portland aspect of the Gary Payton II for five as of yet still unknown seconds.
The Blazers not only get out of a deal that, you know, hasn't worked out super well for them, partially due to Payton's absence, but also just the team not being quite where they wanted to be. They get out of it free and clear. They didn't have to pay Payton those last couple of years, which were always the question marks for me with that contract. It was, you know, the player option in 24-25, and then, you know, roughly like $8-9 million for a player who has a very specific role on a really good team. And incidentally, the Blazers could have used somebody like that. And to not only to get 5 second round picks out of it, we don't know how good those picks are, but to get picks out of it. So from their perspective, as a piece of business, it's completely respectable. I thought it was a little bit of kind of like an overpay and a weird fit at first, just because of the long term commitments and the Blazers' overall books. And so for them to walk away from it, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, and getting Thibault as a kind of a carbon copy of Payton, they might even be able to get him back on a better contract going forward. He's got a little more size. Yeah, I like Payton better as an offensive player, but Thibault is younger, and they get the tax savings that continue with the continuation of the Hart deal. And so, for where the Blazers are, to just get more wild cards in the form of Reddish and Thibault at the wing position. Yeah, I don't think any of them are likely to work out at a high level, but I don't know that they got that much worse from going from Payton and Hart to Reddish and Thibault, both of those guys are cost controlled. They can kind of even like, they could bring both of them back. They could bring one of them back. You know, they could just see who's willing to sign for cheaper, however it works. Like, so I don't think they took that big of a step back. They won financially. They got a first and 5 seconds. I mean, this is all really good business to me for Portland, and still an acknowledgement of like, okay, this is being realistic about where they are and picking up some assets without getting so much worse. And it doesn't really matter that they got a little bit worse anyway. So.
Also,
I think all good business for them.
The theory of Thibault, just like with Payton, there is a part of it that fits in with the Blazers, because even though they have two lead guards, neither one of them is any good as a point of attack defender. So Thibault can certainly be that menace. His offensive game leaves a lot to be desired, and you're presumably pairing him with a center who can't shoot, and that would be Nurkic when Nurkic is available, you know, Drew Eubanks and whoever else there. But, you know, that they don't have a big commitment to Thibault. You can see where his restricted market goes. I am currently thinking that some of these restricted guys are going to get really squeezed by this market. I'm working on my team-by-team projections for the 23 offseason. Those will probably be out of The Athletic either on Friday or over the weekend. And so I think a lot of those guys are going to get squeezed. And so having a little bit of a diversified portfolio for Portland makes sense. And this is kind of it's sort of an appropriate deadline for them, where the Blazers simultaneously like saved money and slightly downgraded, but also still didn't walk away from like their overall place in it. And while there theoretically could be benefits to doing so, as there have been for the last few years, they, you know, as long as they're keeping Damian Lillard, they're never going to be bad enough to truly bottom out. And they have some young guys that they can evaluate now.
Let's talk about Jay Crowder finally ending up with the Milwaukee Bucks. The price in the end was 5 seconds, but a lot of that was just the Bucks moving on from Jordan Nwora, George Hill, and Serge Ibaka to Indiana. I think three of the seconds are going to Indiana there. We know all of the seconds. I don't think we know which ones are going to the Pacers and which ones are going to the Nets, but it's three future Bucks seconds, 24, 28, and 29. Then the 2023 second, the most favorable of the two they own, which are their own, and the less favorable of Cleveland and Golden State. And then the 2025 Pacers second going, maybe that's going back to the Pacers, but that I think
it is. It sounds like that one probably is. Teams love doing that.
Yeah, Charlotte did that too.
So. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
We should actually probably finish out that trade at some point before we forget.
Finish out that trade?
The Thibault, McDaniels, all that.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's finish that up first. Sorry. I was, because, yeah, there are two other teams involved in that. So, yeah, let's go there. That's, I'm getting a little cracked out here by,
So we already talked about night. We already talked about the Portland element of it. But what they gave up in that deal was they traded out Svi Mykhailiuk, who was in the Josh Hart deal. They gave Charlotte. That was from Philly. They traded away the more favorable of their own 27 second or New Orleans's 27. They also gave up Portland's own 29. And then Philly's part of this is fascinating. They traded Matisse Thybulle, and they acquired not only the Knicks 24 second and one of those two Portland seconds, but they also got Jalen McDaniels out of this deal.
Yeah, who I think they probably feel will help them more than Thybulle. And Rich and Derek were talking about this on Sixers Beat recently, that just trading Thybulle, regardless of what you think his value is, like, they just are not going to play him in the playoffs. Like, he hasn't really evolved. Like, he's been helpful at times as a defender in the regular season. The on-off number is really good this year, but he ultimately just can't be trusted in the playoffs, or more importantly, Doc isn't going to trust him and play him. So to get McDaniels, we'll see, another guy who has a theoretical 3-and-D skill set, but has been plying it in a less than high stakes environment. But he shot the ball okay. He was better last year shooting it than he has been this year, but he's not a guy you can just leave totally wide open. And he's got a reasonable amount of size, so maybe he's, you know, you're looking at him as possibly an upgrade on Daniel House in that area, a way to just not have to play PJ Tucker as much in the regular season. And hey, you know, maybe they'll give him a shot in the playoffs. If he plays well, it'll be a boon. But they also got some seconds as well, and they'll have full bird rights on McDaniels. They could potentially re-sign him, and they also get a bunch of savings, so they're out of the tax now, and they have a little more maneuverability. So this is a great piece of business, I felt, for the Sixers to get something and get a player who might be able to help them, that they might be able to re-sign, and also get the cost savings. I think that was, and get out of the tax. When you're that close to the tax, it just, you have to get out, given the big payments that you're going to get. So that was, I think it was a really great piece of business for Philly.
It cost the Sixers two kind of notable pieces, one being Thybulle. Notable is different than valuable. The other one being Charlotte's own 2023 second round pick. We know that's going to be a strong one. So like there is something there, but Jalen McDaniels can help them. And you brought up the bird rights situation. So theoretically, the two sides could come to an agreement. Jalen McDaniels, and we could see how things go. The willingness for either side to renew that commitment will be.
Yeah. And I probably was too facile in my analysis. Like that Charlotte 2023 second going out is probably worth more than the 2 seconds that they got back.
It is.
So they did probably have to pay a little in draft equity for the savings and getting back a player right. who's in
theory but that's where I was getting with it, is like they gave up these two things, but they got a lot for it. And not only did they get out of the tax without, and remember, a lot of the other moves they would have had to make to get out of the tax would have cost them assets, you know. So like, it's not, I don't think a team was falling all over themselves to get Furkan Korkmaz. Sorry, Furkan Korkmaz, you're yet again, after demanding a trade, you're still on the Sixers. We'll see if you sign another contract after, just like you did the time before. And if McDaniels works, great. If he doesn't, you really didn't give up a whole heck of a lot. I don't think that the market for Thybulle absent getting McDaniels back was so much stronger that the opportunity cost is significant for them. But then for Charlotte, they had a lot of structural elements that seemed pretty clear. They, you know, it's like, okay, the clearest things for an obviously bad team to move at the deadline are veterans on expiring contracts that you don't anticipate resigning. That's presumably what the Mason Plumlee story was. You could say that was potentially going to be the case for Kelly Oubre, who did not get traded. That wasn't the case with Jalen McDaniels. Like, McDaniels is a young player. He has a low cap hold. He, you know, it's unrestricted, but you have the capacity to re-sign him. And so to pass that up for a strong second, your own second, I think that's a tell of a couple different things. One is potentially the Hornets evaluation. And another one, paralleling the conversation you and I had less than 24 hours ago about D'Angelo Russell, is presumably Mitch Kupchak, Michael Jordan, and Jalen McDaniels' representation have had a discussion about what kind of contract he's expecting. And theoretically, they could have signed an extension. I didn't expect that to come in the first place. And if they weren't willing to pay McDaniels what they think his next contract is, then this is a reasonable move. It just seems like it was a little bit light of a return.
Yeah, if you consider that pick that they got back is going to be like number 33, and or maybe even higher than that, depending on how things end up. And then number 33 isn't that much worse than number 28 or number 27. And those picks didn't go, right? Like the most, we saw only one first round pick was involved in trades today. And that was a swap to move up like 5 to 8 spots or so in the Gordon deal. And we just didn't see very many of these expiring guys for a first deal. So to get very close to a first, I think that's reasonable value for McDaniels. Maybe a signal also that Charlotte's not going to use cap space this offseason, because they could have got to about $35 million in space if they wanted to move on from PJ Washington. And then they could have utilized the low cap hold of McDaniels, although that is not as useful for a team like Charlotte that will never, ever pay the tax and has to watch their salary anyway. This also might be an indication that they could be interested in re-signing Kelly Oubre, that they're also interested in re-signing PJ Washington. Those guys didn't move. I would be surprised if there was a first out there for either of those guys, or even both of them together. So Charlotte, like, McDaniels has been a good player for them on the wing, but I have no idea what their team is going to look like next year. Miles Bridges might be on it. You know, that could be, although they denied that they were negotiating with him at that time, at least. So I guess just to get this pick back is fine. And, you know, they can use it on the next JT Thor or whatever.
As Nate unintentionally teased there, this is just the start of the episode. There's more to come, including going over the Jay Crowder trade that Nate mentioned. If you want to hear all of it, subscribe to Dunked On Prime with our mock trade deadline sale. dunkedon.supportingcast.fm. dunkedon.supportingcast.fm.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.